Good afternoon, everybody. This is Michael. And we're working together, and we'll be, I think, for quite a long time on Letters on Occult Meditation. We're on program 22 and page 78. We've been looking at the petals regarding the head center, and there's no way that we can yet determine the exact structure here, whether we have 10 tiers of petals at 96 each, giving us 960 plus the 12 in the heart and the head center, or whether somehow we have 108 featuring as a very important number. And the numbers are here, and I've explained them as much as I can in the previous programs. Let's see, today is the 17th, right? Okay, so it's been a little while since we've been able to get together here. But okay, it's happening. And all of these descriptions are taken from the inner life, says the Tibetan. Let me get one of these out. This description applies to the etheric centers, which are themselves the working out into physical plane manifestation of corresponding vortices on the emotional plane with emotional vitality playing through. Emotional vitality, can be, so to speak, located on the higher four subplanes of the astral plane. And then we might say that for the time being, mental vitality is located on the three higher subplanes, plus where we're on the causal body and the monastic permanent atom are found, and also presumably on the fourth subplane where so much is going on there. What I'll try to do here is locate this I'll try to bring in what Tuya has prepared in terms of these diagrams, and I'll open this. And I think we'll see that the area of vitality is found on the higher four subplanes. Now, when we get to the Buddhic plane, no vortices are depicted. Same for the atmic, same for the monadic, same for the logoic. But since 35 vortices of force make a master, it would be 7 times 5, and the atmic plane would necessarily have vortices on the vital area of that plane, the higher four subplanes, and so would the Buddhic. As far as the monadic, of course, it would be far beyond us to understand anything there. The kinds of siddhis or shaktis which are possible on that level. And thus, for the logoic plane, 49 vortices of force would make a Chohan of the seventh degree, just as 42 vortices of force would make a Chohan of the sixth degree, and they would be found on the monadic plane. But DK is not going to illustrate them, nor is he going to talk about the cities. Keith Bailey has collected these cities and put them all together in a chart, which is very useful, but it doesn't really go above all knowledge, the third level on the atmic plane. And of course, when we say all knowledge, I guess we're probably talking about globe knowledge, not necessarily full chain knowledge, and certainly not full scheme knowledge, not yet. So there's just so much to learn about, you know, just so very much. And we'll have to be patient as we proceed. So these vortices have their mental counterparts, and I'll show you those. Maybe I have shown you this before and you're aware of it, but here are the mental counterparts, base of spine, gonads or sacral center, and solar plexus plus the spleen. The spleen seems to be active as the lower point in the pranic triangle on the monastic, atmic, and etheric physical systemic levels. But so much is going on the mental plane here, and this is where the bridging has to take place. And that bridging is probably necessary because of the failure on the moon chain and the need to transfer the life units from the moon chain into the earth chain, which I think we have to say that, like the other chakras, has to pre-exist the deactivation of the moon chain. It's not like one after another they kind of appear. That wouldn't work well, would it? And analogically, when you consider the human chakra system, all the chakras have to be there, at least pulsating, you know, in their earliest degree of activation. So, you know, the concrete mind seems to want some kind of sequence there of one after another, one chain coming into existence after another, but as it does not happen for the human being, I don't think it happens in a planetary sense, if the law of analogy is to hold. What does happen is probably the increased activation of one after another, and well, even the whole idea of sequence has to be questioned, because when you look at the human chakra system as a basis, there is the sense that different triangles get activated. And let's just say the Ajna center on some level gets activated in a personal sense far before the heart center really is activated in a Buddhic sense. So, you know, even the personality requires the Ajna center, and therefore a triangle would be created before real heart activation. Anyway, all of these will be parts of the secrets of initiation, and we have to learn these things, and we will learn them when we show that we know how to utilize them for the benefit of the human race. Okay, so they have their mental counterparts, and in their awakening, as aforesaid, and in their growth and development comes the final vivification, the resultant liberation. So growth and vivification of the chakras leads eventually to liberation of the consciousness. The connection between the centers, the causal body, and meditation lies hid in the following hint. It is through the rapid whirling and interaction of these centers and their increased force through meditation, the ordered occult meditation, that the shattering of the causal body is effected. So what's this telling us? The chakras more highly activated play their role in shattering by whatever means of the causal body. And you know, we've reviewed that around page whatever, 15, 16, 17, something in this book. The different ray methods of seeing to the disintegration of the causal body. When the inner fire is circulating through each center, and when Kundalini is spiraling, so thus connecting Kundalini with the third ray and maybe the second as well, spiraling accurately and geometrically, yes, from vortex to vortex. When we mention geometrically, we do involve the grand geometrician, the second ray lord, SCRL, no, well, okay, from vortex to vortex. Intensification interacts in three directions. Okay, well, this is the hint, so let's kind of emphasize that. The connection between the centers and the causal body, and I suppose the echoic lotus, since the causal body is more the spherical or ovoid radiation of the egoic lotus, the meditation, okay, the connection between the centers, causal body, and meditation lies hid in the following hint. It is through the rapid whirling and interaction of these centers, not necessarily simply sequentially, and their increased force through meditation, the ordered occult meditation, that the shattering of the causal body is effected. Now, here's a question. Let's just say that meditation speeds the whirling of the centers. Destined for fourth dimensional rotation. And I suppose that's something that we have to see, but you know, I've seen some illustrations, video illustrations of toruses, tori, however you pronounce the plural there, and it does seem that such videos can somewhat approximate what fourth dimensionality might look like to us when we develop the psychic powers to see these things directly. I suppose that happens very much after the fourth initiation, because it is the Ajna center through which the higher psychism would come into focus. And that Ajna center is newly related to the spiritual triad around the time of the fourth initiation. So all of these are the technicalities. The intensification reacts in three directions. Okay. It focuses the light or the consciousness of the higher self into the three lower vehicles, drawing it downward into fuller expression and widening its contact on all the three planes in the three worlds. So let's say, soul consciousness is made more accessible in the personality. So there is an enhanced consciousness of the soul as an infusion process occurs. B, it draws down from the threefold spirit, whether that's the considered to be the spiritual triad or the threefold monad, more and more of the fire of the spirit, doing for the causal body what the ego is doing for the three lower vehicles. And I would say, what is this? Whoopsie, sorry. Causing an infusion, just as the soul does for the personality. So the fire of spirit, well, there we're definitely talking about the monadic level. So at the very heart of the spiritual triad and at the heart of the monad is this fire. And there are many definitions for fire, but it is sort of the spirit in action. So here, the fire is the spirit in action, and maybe sometimes you have felt that, and I have felt that. It seems to be an intervention from an altogether higher level and creates a kind of consciousness and sense of being which is not usually experienced. So, what are we looking at here? The intensification of the chakras interacts in three directions. So from the higher self, soul, into the three lower vehicles, and then from the monad into the soul, into the ego, and what else? Now, I think it's much more likely that we're going to experience the downflow of soul energy in our usual personality consciousness than it is that we will understand or experience the fire of spirit. But the more we look into the nature of being, which is the ultimate fire, finally, the more we will understand this, the presence of that possible downflow from the monad into the causal body. Everything really is the monad, you know, all this monad in extension, I call it. The spiritual triad is the monad in extension. The egoic lotus is the monad in extension. The personality and all of its vehicles are the monad in extension and can be ultimately reduced to the monad, just as it went forth. And then point C, it forces the unification of the higher and lower and attracts the spiritual life itself When this is done, when each successive life sees an increase of vitality in the centers, and when Kundalini, in its sevenfold capacity, touches each center, and that's really interesting, then even the causal body proves inadequate for the influx of life from above. If I might so express it, the two fires meet, and eventually the egoic body disappears. The fire burns up the entirely, the Temple of Solomon, Solar Man, Temple of Solar Man. The permanent atoms, those permanent atoms that are in the atomic triangle, including the mental unit, which is not fully a permanent atom, but the permanent atoms are destroyed and all is reabsorbed into the triad, not into the monad yet. The essence of the personality, the faculties developed, the knowledge gained, and the remembrance of all that has transpired becomes part of the equipment of the spirit, and eventually finds its way to the spirit or monad on its own plane. This is so clear. So first, the abstraction. Is into spiritual triad, and only later into the monad. There are several places where you wonder, is there a line direct that goes, returns to the monad? Well, there is a line, but apparently there is a stop along the way within the impersonal world of the spiritual triad. So this vivification of the centers forces the unification of the higher and the lower, and attracts the spiritual life itself. Do we mean spiritual? Do we mean divine? Divine usually refers to the higher two subplanes of any seven-plane system, and spiritual to the higher four, maybe, or subplane three and four. And but let's just say the monad is having its day here. When this is done, very important paragraph here, each successive life sees an increase of vitality in the centers. And when the Kundalini, in its sevenfold capacity, now I don't know where else that is mentioned, touches each center, and then even the causal body proves inadequate for the influx. So the sevenfold nature of the Kundalini leads, when touching, when spiraling upwards directly, is one of the factors leading to the disintegration of the causal body, egoic lotus. If I might so express it, the two fires meet, and we might say, well, you know, we have possibly here the fire spirit and the fire of the egoic lotus. Sorry. And eventually the egoic body disappears. Notice the word eventually. Maybe it's not instantaneously, just the way the masters themselves in their externalization do not appear instantaneously and altogether. The fire, in seven different ways, in seven different ways, according to Ray, burns up entirely the Temple of Solomon. We see, I think, a repetition of that in a little-known mentioned vehicle on the third plane of the Atmic plane, and we see a still higher correspondence of that in the destruction of the Temple of Ezekiel, which probably precedes the seventh initiation, or maybe it is retained, but anyway, the individual has the choice of focusing within the monadic vehicle or focusing still more highly on the seventh plane. And maybe in the council chamber of Sennacherib. The permanent atoms are destroyed. Let's call it the atoms of the atomic triangle. And all is reabsorbed into the triad first. And he says all. The essence of the personality, the faculties developed, the knowledge gained, and the remembrance of all that has transpired, as these are lodged within the permanent atoms of the personality and the mental unit, becomes part of the equipment of the spirit and eventually finds its way to the spirit or monad on its own plane. Well, this is just a brilliant paragraph in terms of the process. We maybe have asked ourselves, what happens when the causal body is destroyed to all the personality faculty. And obviously DK, who no longer is encumbered by a causal body at this time, has every kind of memory about what has transpired when he was focused more personally. He tells us events from his life when he was a second or third degree initiate. So that all had to go somewhere, didn't it? And since he's not yet, well, we don't know for sure, but maybe not yet an initiate of the sixth degree, then the content of the personality and of the causal body has to have made its way into the spiritual triad. So there's a lot to learn from this particular paragraph, or whatever, a couple of paragraphs, maybe a paragraph. Now, let me enumerate for you the things as to which it will not be possible as yet to furnish more information. The risks would be too great. Yeah. Well, we're always up against that roadblock, you know, but the course of wisdom, it's better to have people work things out for themselves than to be given too much, you know. Being given too much is problematic, and there's the tendency towards misuse. I sometimes wonder whether humanity in the beginning was not given too much. You know, the kindness, the love, the desire to see progress encourages the giving, and maybe the giving of too much, but which can then retard real progress. Okay, so now let me enumerate for you, he says, the things as to which it will not be possible as yet to furnish more information. The risks involved would be too great, and we do see how the Master is protecting us from premature knowledge. He sometimes talks about our inability to stand the strain of knowing. And there's more to it as well. I think there's the whole issue about whether we will make false, wrong experimental application of the information given. There's something about, you know, human nature that just wants to try things out. So, although it may for us challenge our patience, we have to abide by his wise caution. I mean, I think, you know, if we stick with this kind of training for some hundreds or maybe even, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 years, we will find ourselves where the Master is in his consciousness and in his point of attention. And since our true being is beginningless and endless, I guess we can afford the attitude of patience, especially if it will provide for us a more sound relation to the teaching, and will put us in a position to help others cautiously. I'm reminded of the oath of Hippocrates, you know, the Hippocratic oath taken by physicians that, first of all, they will do no harm. And the DK seems to be functioning on that basis as a great healer. I'm sure he doesn't want to be responsible for finding people losing lives and lives of possible progress because of their unwise eagerness. So what will he not discuss? The method of arousing the sacred fire, though there are so many books from the East which purport to give that information, but you know, it reminds me of Master Hilarion's warning not to put a muddy foot on the electric ladder. I paraphrase somewhat, but if you're going to climb the ladder of evolution, make sure the foot is clean so you are not frozen upon the ladder by the electric currents. The order of the progression of the Kundalini, but some hints have been given regarding the monadic ray and the speed at which the various points of the triangle are activated. You know, usually, the third ray point activated first, but for strongly second ray people, the second ray point will be activated almost as rapidly. And there are other comparisons that we could get into. And then number three, the geometrical forms as it makes as it mounts, which would pretty well what do we say, telling us where to direct the energy with our Ajna center or imagination. But it is, of course, manipulative. And I think we're better off generally taking the qualitative approach. And then the order of the development of the centers, according to the ray of the spirit, the complexity is too great. Okay, the ray of the spirit, the monadic ray, here. Yeah, all of this is to be worked out depending on the monadic ray, you know, or monadic subray. I think the monadic subray is really found upon the monadic plane and the major monadic ray upon the logoic plane. But the path that we take on the way of higher evolution, well, much is also determined by the monadic subray. The soul has its subray, the monad has its subray, the personality has its subray. And as DK is telling us here, we'll get confused. The complexity is too great. So we just have to trust them. I think trust is such an important thing. I don't think trust is gullibility per se. It is having examined the nature of what the master says, we find that it works out. And we find it to be, as much as we can determine, truthful. And that builds in us a willingness to listen, not with uncritical, narrow enthusiasm, but to listen carefully and then put it to the test of our own intuition. And then if we find that it passes that test, to be as scrupulous as possible in the following of his instructions. That is the way to make progress. I'm just thinking right now, you know, we have this year's 2020, we have a pandemic raging. We find the lack of discipline in the American character contributing to the greatest degree of infection around the world. We find young people and, well, who's a young person? We find young people and people in their middle years flocking to the bars and closely contained spaces without ventilation where there is alcohol and loud music and every opportunity to catch this very easily appropriated disease. Where is the discipline? Where is the listening to those who know better? Maybe it's that sense of invincibility that young people have, you know. I am immortal. Not the kind of immortality that comes from contact with the inner God, that's a different thing, but I am like immortal in the body. So if there's not occult obedience to the soul and to the master, then we have to expect disaster and delay. And we're learning the hard way. Master DK said that there would be much suffering in store, I guess, for humanity, but he singled out the United States and said that that was fortunate for the soul of that great people, you know, who have essentially the seed of brotherhood and the respect of the individual at the heart of all things, an Aquarian attitude. But the suffering in the case of humanity must so often precede the better way. And you kind of wish we could learn through anticipation rather than through an unnecessary suffering. So going on here, you will therefore observe that the subject really becomes more abstruse the longer it is studied. Abstruse, refined, remote, recondite, not easily accessible because of its subtlety. It is complicated by ray development, by the man's own place upon the ladder of evolution. I mean, it was so helpful for Master DK to know some history and the status of those who he brought into his groups of nine, his new and reorganized seed group, his ashramic group, for whom he wrote the rules and the rays and the initiations. So we have to be aware of these complexities. We can't, one size does not fit all, and one method applied to all is not going to work with all. It is complicated by ray development, by the man's own place upon the ladder of evolution, by the uneven awakening of the different centers due to the type of a man's lives, the type. So there must be something that identifies certain types. We do hear of people basically working, let's say, in the hall of ignorance with the first three petals, but then somehow there is development in the hall of learning. Maybe a particular petal is open or in the process of being open, which is in a way ahead of schedule. Or we could even say, I'm not sure whether it skips a whole tier. That would be quite a jump, you know. But there is the same thing occurring from the hall of learning to the hall of wisdom. One can be engaged with those water petals in the love petals in the hall of learning, and that yet somehow something in the hall of wisdom is open. It it demonstrates as a kind of uneven development, or one would be surprised that the individual possesses certain faculties which seem beyond his present labors. And maybe, you know, the other direction works as well. He may be, have moved on into a particular hall like the hall of learning, but there's still some unfinished business in the hall of ignorance. So it's all a very individual matter, and we just cannot have a rigid ironclad system that applies to everybody. So complicated by the uneven awakening of the different centers due to the type of a man's life, lives, And, you know, maybe you would think that all the particular subdiaphragmatic centers are open to the same degree, but they're probably not. And the heart and the throat center, probably not. Those are the thoracic centers. And in the head, we're given a huge opportunity for variegated openings. There are so many centers, master centers, directing centers, and they're just not all open to the same extent. So one has to be able to see and then apply this kind of medicine, as it were, is a very individual process, and it requires great caution on the part of the one recommending methods of meditation and breathing exercises and other exercises which are meant to create more balance. It is rendered more complex by the threefold nature of the centers themselves, etheric, emotional, and mental. And by the fact that some people have one or other emotional center completely awakened and demonstrating etherically, whilst the mental counterparts may be quiescent. Demonstrating etherically, does this mean demonstrating the etheric portion of the astral plane? So, you know, there is additional complexity. Sometimes we hear about the chakras and we think we know something about them, but we're just dealing with the etheric chakras. There are the astral chakras. And in esoteric healing, he gives different rays for those chakras than we may have been accustomed to when looking at the chakras on the systemic etheric physical plane. And then we have certain chakras on the mental plane. And eventually, when the causal body goes, we will have additional mental chakras and not the angel of the presence at all. So there's quite a bit of numerical complexity, especially if the different chakras that more or less correspond with each other are ruled by different rays. And somehow it's around page 50 or 51 of Esoteric Healing, and maybe page 150. You know what I would do is, let's see if I go to page 50 here. Yeah. So, you know, right away what I see on page 50 of Esoteric Healing is the head center, yes, is ruled by the first ray, as we would expect, but the Ajna center is not ruled by the fourth and fifth rays, but by the seventh. And it has an atmic connection in the heart center by the second, as we would expect, and the throat center by the fifth, not the third. Solar plexus, sixth, as we would expect, sorry. Sacral center, usually by the seventh etherically, but in this case, the third. And the base of the spine has a fourth ray connected with it instead of a first ray. But then there are so many different rays connected with this base of the spine center. So here are, these are the astral forces. And let's see if there's anything over here on page 150 or thereabouts. Whoop. This is is, well, we're looking at some chakric representation, and there is something around these pages which deals with the centers and with maybe with different assignments, you know, than we find etherically. And then who knows what we'll find on the mental plane. Here's the head center being a point of focus for Atma, for the spiritual will. Well, that makes sense, of course. Anyway, one has to read carefully this information. It's not only for the esoteric healers. There is just a lot of information here that needs development. Let's see this. Here's an important diagram about petals aiming upwards and downwards and what they connect with. So, you know, we have a lot of information given in the esoteric healing book. I think it has to be studied carefully. I'm making a mental note here, you know, because I'm not a healer per se. I have not studied this with the same intensity as the psychology books or every other book in the Rays series of books. But yes, it should be. And there are so many, I think, doctors who would benefit from this study. Okay, so going back then. So you will observe that the subject really becomes more abstruse the longer it is studied. It is complicated by ray development, by the man's own place on the ladder of evolution, by the uneven awakening of the different centers due to the type of a man's lives. It would be interesting to see what he considers to be the type of a man's lives. It is rendered more complex by the threefold nature of the centers themselves, and within every center there's a third ray sort of foundation of the flower, a second ray petal arrangement, and a first ray jewel or seed area. But here he's talking about three different kinds of centers. By the fact that some people have one or other emotional center completely awakened and demonstrating etherically, whilst the mental counterparts may be quiescent. So basically, such variation in the type of in the type of awakenings. Others may have the mental centers awake and the emotional not so vivified and be etherically quiet. So we might say people more on the fifth and third rays. He tells us very interestingly that it's easier for people on the third and fifth ray, and maybe he means soul ray, to take the second initiation because they are basically not emotional. I think it's quite tough for the second and sixth ray and fourth ray, the even line, to take the second initiation, and maybe not so easy for the first ray either. That's going to be a whole study about what the different ray types encounter when they take the various initiations. I've been meaning to get into it, but my work there would be speculative, because I think DK needs to say more so we don't wander astray in interesting possibilities. Excuse me. Therefore, it will be obvious how great is the need for conscious clairvoyant teachers who can judiciously work with pupils, stimulating through scientific knowledge and methods the dormant or sluggish centers. He tried to do this with the very first disciple listed in the book. His last name was Adams, so he had an A there and he was listed first. And his Ajna center was very undeveloped. The solar plexus with all of his sixth ray was 60% developed, but the Ajna center, I think, around 15%. So it was sluggish, and DK tried to do something about that, I think, to induce a form of higher psychism. There's a group here associated with the Maurya Federation. They're excellent esoteric astrologers, and they are doing excellent research in looking up the personal lives of the people to be found in the Dina books, you know, they are, even from their pictures, very interesting physiognomically. A big chance exists there to determine the physiognomical expression of the ray types. And maybe, you know, some generalization can occur. And of course, that's my particular interest. I used, you know, in New York, I used to travel from New Jersey and go to various art museums where portraiture was being displayed. And I was interested in the kind of ray expression of the portrait. But other people have different interests, and taken in their aggregate, you know, what we can all do together, we'll get a pretty full picture. So we need teachers that really can be with us and help to awaken the dormant centers, because they see what has to be done, and aligning them so that the current can freely flow back and forth between the external vortices and the inner center. And what does he mean by that? You know, does he consider the glands? They are precipitations of the etheric vortices, but maybe he considers the astral vortices and what such mental vortices as there are thus far, and, you know, vortices which he doesn't even list except to mention the numbers. Maybe he considers those inner. Because in general, the awakening of a vortex means that the city or power associated with that vortex, that maybe there's more than one, begin to awaken. And there are so many of these different cities that I think, you know, they must be connected with vortices on the higher planes. Again, you know, the compendium that Keith Bailey made here is very useful. And once again, I'll show it to you. Might, you know, if you're interested, you might want to contact him and just see if he can make that available to you. But here, AAB diagrams, and I'll keep moving until we find it. There it is. Well, you, as you can see, on every subplane, up to the highest mental subplane, well, up to the third atmic subplane, there is a city or a power. And I would say that the way things have gone, that a vortex would be associated with each one of these powers. Let's see if I, that's available to you to look at. Of course, you know, naturally you could take a sort of a screenshot of it and it would be useful to you. We have to kind of know which ones of these cities we are presently developing. And they don't necessarily develop fast, but I would say a lot of concentration now is going on a spiritual discernment and response to group vibration. And increasingly, as we study the great books here on spiritual telepathy, some people are working with the ladder to intuition on the Buddhic plane. And probably very few of us can work on the ladder of the atmic plane. It just probably requires a development beyond that which we have succeeded in achieving. Okay. So later, the teacher can train the pupil in the safe awakening of the inner fire. In its scientific culture and transmission, and instruct him in the order required for its convolutions along the path of the triangles until it reaches the head centers. Now, these will vary. Okay, let's just say that. Will vary with the monadic ray. Well, we have the entire age of Aquarius before us, so we can't really rush the process. It's coming. When Kundalini has traversed these geometrical lines, the man is perfected. The personality has served its purpose and the goal has been reached. And when do we imagine this to be? And I would just say, you know, we imagine, we suspect this occurs at the fourth initiation. So, you know, there are right paths and wrong paths, and if we somehow mistakenly engineer the path of Kundalini to take an unwarranted path, we're going to meet with tremendous resistance and break down protective barriers and find ourselves having to rebuild in the future when we should be advancing through because of the cautious method we have used. Every seventh ray magician, I'm sure, drawing that magic circle knows the necessity of caution because of the many forces which could even kill him in the process. He would be deprived of his body. There would be a hiatus where we cannot afford to have one. He might, you know, symbolically or in terms of actuality, he might burn up, he might drown, he might be buried, you know. Maybe death by air, we're told, is not yet understood. Hence the fact that all the centers have petals whose numbers are multiples of four, for four is the number of the lower self, the quaternary. Now, here, there's only, you know, I wonder how DK looks at that, because see, that is a big question. What about the six-petaled sacral center, six-petaled spleen, and 10-petaled solar plexus center? Now, maybe if we combine the sacral and the solar plexus, we get 16, and that is together. There you have a multiple of four. The heart being 12 is a multiple of four. The throat being 16 is a multiple of four, four times four. The Ajna center being 96 is a multiple of four, 24 times. Base of the spine to the Ajna center, 24 times. 24 times four, 96. And 960 is a multiple of four, you know, the head center. And that is 240. And then 243, if we count the head center, heart center within the head. Most are multiples of four, but we have to do something to the subdiaphragmatic chakras to even that out, because six, while it is a multiple of two, is not really a multiple of four. So you kind of wonder, you know, why he says that. But combining six and 10, yes, if there's a way in which sacral and solar plexus are combined, then together they are a multiple of four. The total number of petals in the centers, if we eliminate the spleen, six-petaled, which has a purpose all its own, and the three lower organs of creation, is 1,110. Okay, let's write it. You see information here that just is nowhere else. 1,110, the total number signifying the perfection of the microcosm. 10, the number of the perfected personality. 100, the number of causal perfection. And 1,000, the number of spiritual achievement. Wow. You know, have I forgotten this? Did I ever read it? I'm sure many of us have encountered material that we wonder, did I ever read it? 10, the personality perfected. 100, the causal body perfected. 1,000, the spirit perfected. And I guess, you know, we can look at 10 as the Kabbalah, the three above the seven. But what are we looking at when we look at the 100? What is the structure? I think we'll have to, you know, kind of ponder on that. When it comes to 1,000, well, we have the 1,000 petal lotus. Is it literally 1,000? Or is that a symbolic figure for 960 plus 12? You have to ask how many Pleiades are there really, because the Pleiades seem to be the cluster which represents the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, in which we are playing our part, and our cosmic logos is playing its part in this supercosmic logos. Okay. So this is this is really important. 1,110. And I'll make that bigger. And even lined up the way they are, three ones and a zero has to be significant. Esoteric numerology will give us many answers, but we only penetrate so far into it. He gives kind of an example with the words in Esoteric Psychology 1 of four, F-O-U-R, and force, F-O-R-C-E. And he analyzes them in an esoteric numerological manner. So it might be worth looking up and getting into. The spleen is definitely lesser center, but it has its own function in the pranic triangle, and the energy above the center in that pranic triangle above the diaphragm will have a certain number of petals, and the energy of the center within the between the shoulder blades, which is not the heart center, maybe it's the lung center, will have a certain number of petals. He has not given those to us as far as I know, but there has not yet been a chakra appearing that has 8 petals, and there may be in that area a monastic center with 8 petals. Again, a multiple of 4. So we have 4 times 1, base of spine, 4 times 2, maybe this monastic center. It would correlate with, you know, the 8 of Mercury and the 8-like shape, the shape of the Kundalini. 4 times 3 would be the heart, again, multiple of 4. 4 times 4 would be the throat center, again, a multiple of 4. Well, if this is a very technical area, which I think will yield a lot of a rich understanding. It's quite different from the way numerology is normally applied, you know, in a very personal sense. What we have here is the organization of the structure of the etheric system of man, and by analogy of greater etheric systems. I guess we also know that if the human being has an etheric system of chakras, so does the planet. And if a human being has an astral system of chakras, so does the planet. And a mental series of chakras not yet completed, well, we don't, the planet will have that, but we don't know how completed. And so, you know, everything I said of the planet will be true of the solar logos, but since the solar logos does have a great solar angel, maybe there's something about its development which was also held back and which needed or needs the intervention of a great being, even as we have the intervention of a lesser being to help us along the way of using Blavatsky, call it a hothouse development or cultivation. We're in the hothouse and we're being cultivated by the solar angel, angel of the presence. So many things to reveal. We're not yet going to have the mystery of the solar angel vouchsafe for us. We just can't solve it. And DK tells us we can't solve it yet, you know. And slowly, slowly, during the Aquarian Age, as more and more of the esoteric wisdom becomes ours, we will solve these inner abstruse considerations. Now, it looks like the sun is really... I'm going to have to turn off the picture on the side. So, when every petal vibrates in all dimensions, then the goal for this manvantara, you know, it's a period, it's not specific, it's a generic period, is reached. The lower lotus is full blown and reflects the greater with precision. And I suppose we have to somehow ask, what is this lower lotus? We do have the egoic lotus. And interestingly enough, the Temple of Ezekiel will be a lotus-like structure as well. And the number 12 is very important, just as it is in the causal body egoic lotus. Is there a personality lotus? Well, there's certainly lotuses within the vehicles of the personality. By what alchemy the personality is created, we'll leave that to that expert in such creation, namely the solar angel. It has all of these alchemical techniques available to it, and it works upon our permanent atoms and I suppose the mental unit. You know, if you put the mental unit together with the monastic permanent atom, which seems to be a bond which must occur, again, we'll have the seven. But normally, the monastic permanent atom has only three spirillae, and the buddhic permanent atom three, and the atmic permanent atom three as well. as far as what's the permanent atom on the monadic plane and probably logoic, responsible for the building of vehicles there, we just don't know. But we will. And you realize, of course, how much even just the fundamentals of occultism, our spiritual occultism, are missing from the understanding of the average, let's call it spiritually inclined individual. They accept some kind of dogma and they see things in terms of an end, you know. The life is over and heaven or hell awaits forever. Not a very attractive scenario, I would say. Okay. The next section is the effect of occult meditation on the centers, and I think that before letter five, okay, it's page 87, and we have reached page 81. So I think that the best thing to do is call it quits for this program and then get on into another program if possible. And here we have 78 to 81. Okay. Yeah, and today being the 17th, such interesting material, really. I mean, it's almost as if I read this book and when younger and didn't realize what I was reading, or the depth of it, you might say. So this is our program number 22, the end of it, and it takes place on the 17th, and we basically are going to page 81, and 81 is where we begin with program 23 on the XX of August, depending on what I can do. Oh. Well, and if I turn this on, you know, the light from the sun is just too much, but just waving goodbye to you here and thanking you for showing up, whatever year it happens to be for you. And we will continue with this marvelous book. We're almost, well, we're, you know, a little more than a fourth done with it. Not very much, really. So our next work will be here on the effect of occult meditation on the centers. And I'm sure everybody wants to know about that, even though, as he says, I just won't tell you. What does he say he won't tell you? somewhere here. Somewhere he tells us what he won't tell us. Yeah. The method of arousing the sacred fire, the order of its progression, the geometrical forms it makes as it mounts. Apparently not all, apparently not all same form, apparently. And the order of the development of the centers according to the ray of the spirit, meaning the monadic ray. And here the complexity is too great. So this is what he will not yet tell us. Well, it's only been 100 years, right? So we'll be moving on to program number 23 when that becomes possible. Meanwhile, lots of love and many blessings from Tuya and myself and the whole communications team. You know, we have quite a few people, BL and Joe and Michael Stacy and Michael Crow and others who are helping us at different times for the conference and so forth. Bob and Rodrigo. And anyway, a lot of people working to bring you the teaching, as it is said, over the radio. Over the radio. Well, it's been a long time since that was written, and the radio certainly has expanded. We'll be in touch with you soon. Bye-bye.